This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to the Nerdcast on ProjectNerd.com.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
I knew it. I knew you were bluffing. I knew he was bluffing.
You're listening to the Nerdcast.
I feel like I should say something smart.
With Adam, Bob, Iggy, and Tyler.
You mustn't be afraid to dream a little bigger, darling.
Only on Project Nerd.
That is one big pile of shit.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing some really interesting stuff there, and there's some really interesting ideas there, but they, like, yeah, you don't hire Christopher Eccleston to play your villain and then make him speak in subtitles with a made-up language the entire movie. Like, you're not doing yourself any favors in that department.
Yeah, so when you were joining, the reason we're talking about this, rewatching the MCU, is that Adam and Laura are reworking their way through it. And it sounded like you're already to, was it Civil War? Is that what
Yeah, we're at Civil War, man. And we started this weekend. I've probably been putting in.
Good Lord. I started watching a lot.
Well, I started Iron Man one day. Like, her and I were both having like a crappy day working, and we sit in the front room. So I was like, I'm going to put Iron Man on in the background. And I'll just go through them because I know it's Iron Man and Iron Man 2. So if you have Disney Plus, it's just those two right in a row. Like,
right.
Like, okay, no problem. I can watch those in the background. I don't really care. I've seen them a million times. I know what goes on. And then after that, it became like we finished work at like 5. We start dinner. We cook some dinner. We sit down and we knock out 2 Marvel movies before we go to bed. And it's been like every day. And then over the weekend, we did a bunch.
Right. You've watched Civil War, or you are getting ready to watch Civil War?
I'm halfway through.
You had to stop it for us.
Fight scene to stop and come talk to you weirdos.
Stop it for us, Tyler. We're special.
That's how much I like you. Is that I stopped in the airport fight scene?
But Adam
actually.
No, I was going to say he brings that up to me, and coincidentally, I was saying my kids especially got really excited to start showing. Aaron had never seen these movies, so we've started back through them as well. So that's where I was saying, well, we've only made it through 3 movies.
She'd never seen any of them.
I don't think any of them. Hold on, have you seen any of the Marvel movies before? She's seen both Ant-Man ones. That's right. Yeah, that's
because,
about it.
Yeah, because Paul Rudd's delightful.
Because Paul Rudd's delightful. So
that's 100% amazing that the only one she's seen are the Ant-Man movies out of all of the.
I know.
Because usually it's like someone's seen like one, they've seen like Iron Man 1 and then like one of the Guardians of the Galaxy or something like
right?
that.
Right. I would expect Guardians of the Galaxy or somebody's not familiar with. Like, I think that's a great example. My mom, who has now seen more of them because of it was because my brother first took her to see Guardians of the Galaxy, and she's like, this is fun, like I like this, and I'm like, check out these other ones, you know. So no, the Ant-Man ones are interesting for sure, but
I mean,
no.
It's funny you say that because I have a friend who has only seen the 4 Avengers films and the Spider-Man crossover films.
Really?
And he's like a movie guy, but he's just not a comic book or Marvel guy. Like, he's a hardcore movie buff and just never sees them. But anytime one of the Avengers would come out, he would go with us and usually get pretty drunk at the theater and just watch this entire Avengers movie and not know anything that's going on and just have a ball, like watching other people get really into it.
I mean, it doesn't sound like a bad time.
He enjoys it.
That's a good time.
But then after it's over, he's like, he obviously has no idea what's going on from top to bottom, and this is kind of entertaining.
Right. Before we get too far, I should probably say this. You guys are obviously listening to the Nerdcast by Project Nerd. This is episode 230. Brought to you by Geek Garage, geek-garage.com. Go check it out. Kudos to that team. It's been a couple weeks now, but I don't think we haven't gotten together and talked about it. They did a Heroes tour around Denver. I would have to look at what he told me, but it was over 100 miles of the drive. What did we end up calling them? Car parades? Because Adam doesn't want to call them drive-bys. So car parades. So huge there on the Geek Garage, a number of those vehicles. They've shared, at least on their social media, the links to some of the news stories covering it and a lot of their photos and live driving of it too is pretty cool. So go check it out, geek-garage.com. This is Adam, Tyler, Iggy. Bob is not joining us again this week. Bob's in the middle of moving, guys, and all his stuff's in storage. So he'll be back with us soon, eventually. But we are deep in discussion, obviously, about revisiting the MCU, as well as we have a number of other things to talk about. But let's keep talking revisiting MCU. I just wanted to make sure we let people know who we are if they stumbled upon us inadvertently, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's really, really good. And I don't know how you have a movie buff who went and saw all the Avengers movies. Like, I mean, because Infinity War loses a lot of its, like, holy crap, they made this actually work unbelievably well without the background knowledge. Like, I mean.
Oh, no, 100%. He doesn't care. Like, he's not, he has no interest in seeing them. He's only gone and seen the Avengers because the rest of all of his friends, we were all going. So he just wanted to come along. But he's never just had any interest in it.
I'm okay with that. But even as a movie guy, like, if you're going to be the movie guy, if you're going to be a guy who one of us would consider a movie guy.
I mean, like, he's like 100%
you're a movie guy.
And he's 100% made movies. Like, he is a filmmaker who has made movies. And when I say movie buff, I mean, like, his favorite, you know, his favorite filmmakers are like Shane Carruth and Kubrick and stuff like that. I mean, I think part of it is just no interest, and part of it is a little bit of a snobbery thing, but it's just never something that he doesn't care.
Like, well, we can say collectively that those films and what Marvel accomplished over that 10-year period is remarkable, right?
It is. Like, it is. But there are other people. You guys both know him too. Mark Covino, the creator of A Band Called Death, right? Filmmaker. He too, he feels like some of those people that especially have been behind the scenes of films feel like that type of thing takes away from their individual, it takes away from individual movies, because people now, all the studios want to pay big bucks for long-term franchises, do all this stuff. And so for him, he doesn't get as excited about these either, because it's like, it does negatively impact how they make movies now.
And there are people whom are actively opposed to these. He doesn't have any like ill feelings towards them. He just is. I mean, if I like say, hey, like, we're going to watch this, he'll watch it. He's not going to go out of his way to go see the film. Like, he's indifferent towards them. And I don't know. I'm not, I get that. Like, it seems all weird right, to us, right. But there are 100% people who haven't seen them. Are you going to go start talking shit on Erin now? Cause she obviously hasn't seen any of them.
I tell you, we're slowly introducing her to this world. She'll get
she
there.
She started good with Ant-Man. It's got our boy from KC, Paul Rudd. So I can let that slide for sure.
Always let Paul Rudd slide there. So,
but I am curious, you're only the halfway point. I'm curious, cause this is one that I've struggled with. There's so many amazing moments in Civil War, and there's so many introductions in Civil War that I think it took a while. It taped over it. I've now gone back and watched it a few times. It's not great.
Well, the problem we have too is and we kind of talk about it, comparing Iron Man 3 after you watched Iron Man 1 and 2, right, Adam? And so it's the same thing. I know, Tyler, you're in the same boat as me. I think the first two Captain America movies are two of the best movies in the whole, like, phase one. And then you go to Civil War, which is more of an Avengers movie.
I still 100%. It depends on what day you get me, but it's very – there's – Winter Soldier might be the best of all the Marvel movies as a movie.
It's a better spy suspense type movie, like, overall.
It's such a good movie. And there's every movie has their spot, their niche they fit. And the Marvel movies have definitely gotten better as time has gone on, where they've, you know, there's a lot of characters who are like, you know, you watch the changes of Thor as you go through different filmmakers. You watch the changes to Black Widow as you go through, like Black Widow's introduction's not stellar. You know, it's not a great, it's not a great look years later, but there's a lot of those characters because of the director, because of Disney and Feige and them loosening up a little bit about how much control they have over these things. But beyond all of that, like, just as a film, Civil War is not great. I think there's just too much trying to happen in it. I'm not going to say it's as bad as like a, you know, Avengers 2 or something like that, or a Iron Man 3, but it's not awesome.
I'd agree. I think it's part of it too is I think it's ultimately another Avengers movie is what it is the problem.
It is
too.
Another Avengers movie, but I think we get distracted by because there's so many things. Anything and all the things involving Spider-Man, the introduction of Black Panther, the airport scene. Like, there's so much good stuff in Civil War, but as a story from, like, top to bottom, it's kind of, it's okay.
It feels like there's a lot shoehorned in to keep things moving. Like, it feels like there's a lot of conversations that are, you know, like, we go from, you're only, what, one movie removed from Age of Ultron, where Tony unilaterally decides that he's going to fix and save the world by creating Ultron in the first place.
Say,
to immediately being like, we need oversight. We do horrible things. And it's like, whoa, bud, everybody told you not to do that. Like one movie ago. And I was talking with Laura about this. And she goes, well, people are allowed to grow. And I'm like, sure, they can grow. But I mean, he is like fully one side, then fully the other side. That's not really growth.
But that fits Tony Stark, even from the comics. I mean, that's why the whole Iron Man 1, where he just decides, screw it, I'm going to say who that I am, is because it fits with that character. But what I was also going to say is that light bulb just hit me as you were saying that, because now that even just for Ultron to really work, Iron Man 3 is super important. Yeah, like Iron Man 3 is a lot more important. So
yeah, like his entire arc doesn't. Iron Man 3 is not a great movie, but his whole arc doesn't work without it.
Right. So. Yeah.
Tony's so, arc doesn't. I don't know. My Civil War, like you said, they cram out, they shoehorn a lot of stuff in there, and it's a lot of. And I don't think it's like a purposeful like bad filmmaking. I think it's just a. It's an economy of time because they have to get so much through stuff. There's so much tell don't show in Civil War. Like there's so many like expository scenes where someone has to explain to someone what happened. And there's this very intricate, sneaky plot going on with Zemo pretending to be the guy doing the thing and put him in the guy in the bathtub and the thing. And every beat of that entire plot has to be explained by another character in the next scene because no one understands any of it because they're having to fit so many things in it.
I love your there's character description of it though. He's the guy who has to do the thing.
Well, that's the thing. It's so
that's what it's like when you're watching that scene though.
It's such a convoluted plot that on paper I think works well. I think someone wrote Zemo's plot in full and then they took a second plot and said, like, let's put these together. And then now, okay, Zemo's thing takes up too much, so we've got to condense it. Well, now none of these other scenes make sense. Cool. Well, the next scene, we'll have someone explain what Zemo's been doing for the last, like, 30 minutes because no one really gets it.
Yeah. And you say how they had to cram so much in and that they were afraid for it to go long. That movie's still, like, just under 2.5 hours. And it was still before Marvel was, like, We can't do more than 2.5 hours because they all of a sudden, very shortly after Civil War, clip 2.5 hours, and then all of them are three. Like, we don't care. If you're going to sit in a theater for 3 hours, you'll be fine.
That Civil War would be better if it was longer. Like, I don't know that it would be, because it definitely doesn't move very quickly. Like, there's some scenes that move well, but it definitely drags in spots, but. I Civil War, now that we're talking about it, now that I say all those things out loud, Civil War feels like two different scripts that they said, well, just put them together and make it turn it into one story.
So we're talking a lot about Marvel here, which I think, God, we could probably do a whole spinoff podcast series for that too. But the other one that Tyler's joked about doing a spinoff podcast series for is the DCEU. So the DC cinematic universe. And we talked extensively in the past couple episodes about some of these things. But what's really interesting is that now the Zack Snyder cut is it leading to revolt or is it leading to revolution within the ranks? Because all of a sudden then David Ayer is like, hey, I have a director's cut of this Suicide Squad movie you guys hate, and it was way better. Why don't you let me do my director's cut? And then Patty Jenkins comes out and says, actually, I was approached for Justice League initially, and that's just too many characters. I wanted nothing to do with it. And now the Birds of Prey, number one one-shot that just came out in comic stores this past week, they're coming out from behind the scenes, and they're saying, actually, that's pretty much where we wanted the Birds of Prey plot to go, but we were forced to make it too much about Harley Quinn. So I don't know if this thing for Zack Snyder changing it is, I mean, we already felt it wasn't going to be good for the DCEU, but I feel like behind the scenes, it's even doing some damage now.
And I mean, what you could say about the DCEU for the first little bit was that it was consolidated. Zack Snyder was in control. They were making his movies, and you could at least make the argument that they had something. It was doing what they wanted it to do behind the scenes, right? I mean, those movies made a ton of money. Let's not joke around. Like, Warner Brothers is not upset with the box office income that they were making. Like, they're fine with the dollar part. So behind the scenes, no problems whatsoever. Now all of a sudden they've got to deal with, I mean, I guess deal with insurrection, but if it makes them money, they probably don't care. Because they didn't make good movies and they didn't care because it made them money.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. Everything they do, I feel like, is one step forward, two steps back. Like every time you feel like, okay, maybe they're really starting to turn it around, then something awful comes out. But like insurrection, I don't know if it's the word I would, but like disorganization, revolt, like creative, quote unquote, creative differences. Like that's been the theme of that whole thing for everyone who wasn't named Zack Snyder. I mean, at some point, we're still supposed to get a Flash movie, I'm pretty sure, but literally they've gone through what, like six directors at this point for that movie, and who knows how many scripts, to the point where they even put the guy who the real Flash showed up in the TV show, like the Flash from the movie showed up in the TV show, because that's how much they've just checked out on that. Like if they're gonna let that sort of thing happen, I don't know. I just at this point I don't. There's some really good stuff in there, whether it be Wonder Woman, whether it be a little bit something different with, you know, Shazam being a little bit different, Aquaman being fun but not great. I don't know that the good parts are worth saving at this point. Like, at this point, like, they just need to tear it all down. And this is not going to work. They're never going to start over again because they tried too much too soon. They need to burn it all down, put one person in charge, and just say, let's do this organically and let's do it right. But right.
They have 8 movies out right now. Worldwide box office, $5.4 billion.
8 movies?
Yeah, Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Suicide Squad, Wonder Woman, Justice League, Aquaman, Shazam, Birds of Prey.
Jesus Christ.
Right? And obviously Birds of Prey is their weakest showing, but that has everything to do with what happened in like the world, the theaters being shut down and everything like that. But Aquaman is the only one that's actually singular has gone over $1 billion earned worldwide. And Wonder Woman was second to that, obviously. But again, yeah, you look at it, you want to talk about Justice League still made $655 million. Suicide Squad still made $750 million, like 746. Batman v Superman was $873 million. Like, that's big. They have made money, that's for sure. Adam has a lot of confusion. Look at going.
How is Wonder Woman still not the highest grossing one of those? That's so upsetting to me.
I feel like it didn't do great worldwide comparatively.
Domestically, it is the highest grossing one, right? Yeah. So domestically, it is the highest grossing one by pretty far. It is the only one.
But worldwide, it didn't make.
Right. It is the only one to break 400 million domestically. Of any of them. But again, worldwide, it was half of its take for worldwide. For Aquaman, it was 335 domestically, but 1.143 billion worldwide. So it did great worldwide.
Yeah. And you're not wrong, but at the same time, you're not wrong when you say that they're not mad, like they're making money, but knowing anything about how Hollywood works, they are mad because they're not. Because Marvel's making more. Yeah, like, you just listed off those movies. Worldwide, Captain Marvel made $1.1 billion. Marvel, the one that by many people considered to be one of the less successful ones,
right,
made $1.1 billion worldwide on its own. You need to count exactly, like, 2 Marvel movies to hit the entire DC, like, gross. Top two have got to be, Infinity War 1 and 2, right? What are those two worldwide?
Infinity War and Endgame. Certainly from Infinity War forward. So Infinity War, what's after Infinity War? You get Ant-Man versus Wasp, Captain Marvel, and then Endgame. Those 4, I'm sure, break DC's. So half as many movies, more money earned.
I mean, Endgame and Infinity War combined are already $4.8 billion.
Yeah, you're at a $22.5 billion for the MCU, which obviously has 31 movies comparatively. But the Tyler's strong point there of, yeah, we're making money as DC, but when you look at your competitor, Disney, the Star Wars and MCU franchise alone is over $33 billion. Like, that is a lot of money.
Whoever was running Disney that led to the acquisition of Marvel Studios and led to the acquisition of Lucasfilms needs a huge bonus.
Iger's doing perfectly fine.
They fired everybody else and are still collecting bonuses this summer too. So Iger's still getting a bonus this year even. Yeah. So
Iger's did perfectly fine out of all of this.
Yeah, but to count exactly is you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You have 9 movies that worldwide did over $1 billion. Comparative to 8 movies made on the Justice League side. Like, so that alone, you could find just eight of them and still double, you know, what DC's done. So yeah, they're making money, but I think, but it's a good point too, is it's leading to better things being done, to James Gunn going on Suicide Squad, to, while this, whatever's going on in the World Theater closed right now, why the hell not? Let's see what the Justice League cut or the Zack Snyder cut is what they've decided to do, right?
Well, that's why nobody's clamoring for a David Ayer.
Yeah, director, we don't need a director's cut. We're just gonna wait for the new one. We're just gonna pretend yours didn't exist. It's slowly by slowly the list of movies, that one's just gonna fade away. Like, oh, that first Suicide Squad? You mean the one James Gunn did? Because I don't remember one before that. That's what they're gonna be like. So
I'm also still kind of worried about Wonder Woman 84.
1984,
Because it was a thing and then it got pushed back, but then the world fell apart and now
it's pushed back again.
They talk about it, but they don't talk about it. I'm very curious. Like, did they not? And here's the thing: did they not like it?
There were reshoots too. Remember, there were reshoots was part of that. Yep.
So I don't know. That concerns me. At the same time, it's like some studios do reshoots and redo things and push things back, and we're just like, oh, that's probably terrible. But when the DC, bigwigs, you know, say something's awesome or say something's bad, that's almost like, oh, you guys didn't like it? Then it must be basically awesome.
Was it?
They were telling
Was it Suicide Squad when they were Justice League? Yeah, that's one of the two going into it, to where they it was
not Suicide Squad. It was either Justice League or it might have been Batman versus Superman, where they leaked out that like they showed like a close to final cut of the movie to executives at Warner Brothers, and they were all like, "This is the greatest movie that's ever been made."
I'm pretty sure it was Justice League. I feel like it was Justice League. Yeah, that was definitely a thing.
Well, and it's so ridiculous. The executives gave it a standing ovation. Like, well, yeah, they just paid $400 million to get it made. What are they going to be like?
And, oh, shit, we screwed this up. Did it. And they have to say, and they knew, like, we had to switch directors part ways, and we did reshoots, and we had two different tones, and it came together somehow. Hell yeah, we're leaking that. We love this because we need people to show up weekend one to make up for what was clearly a train wreck. But I don't know.
I'm looking at their slate, though. And outside of that one and Suicide Squad, only because it's Gunn, for no other reason other than that Gunn is directing it, I'm really, that's a lie, I'm kind of intrigued by what they're doing with the Batman just on casting alone. I want to see those people play those roles, but I'm completely uninterested in Black Adam. I've pretty much checked out on them making a Flash movie, as much as I like Ezra, I can't think of his name. Like, I enjoyed Miller. Him, but Ezra Miller, I'm checked out on that. Shazam 2, all right, cool. Aquaman 2, once was enough for that one. I mean, not that it was bad, it was fun, but...
I know, but the...
You also have to recast Mara, because Amber Heard's not going to ever
finally, but it took forever before they finally confirmed that they weren't bringing her back. That one dragged out. But no, you still... And you have, which is not being talked about a lot, but... The New Gods was in pre-production at some point. I don't even know if that's still a thing anymore.
Well, I mean, like at one point they had a Amazonians movie. They had a Batgirl thing. They had a Blue Beetle thing. They were going to do a Cyborg. Then they talked about maybe doing a Deadshot thing with Will Smith. And then Idris Elba replaced him. And then he was written out of it so that Smith could come back. Like, they were going to make a Sirens. They were going to make just a Joker movie.
Well,
they even talked about making like a Nightwing movie, even though they haven't introduced a Robin yet. Like, I honestly don't know. They've talked about a lot of things and they've made exactly this many movies.
Right.
And one of those one have been good.
Well, Patty Jenkins doing what would have probably at the time been her promotion tour for Wonder Woman 1984 a few months back did confirm that she will be stepping out of the director's chair, but there is already a Wonder Woman 3 and that Amazonian movie, as you mentioned, being talked about. So really interesting,
is,
for sure.
Is Joss Whedon still making a Batgirl movie? Is that still a thing?
No, that one definitely got confirmed as no longer.
Can we talk about him a little bit? Because I just watched Age of Ultron today. Does he make good superhero movies? Like, we like him collectively. Like, Firefly is really good. Dollhouse is quite good. Buffy the Vampire Slayer was very good.
Can he make
a good comic movie?
We would actually, to break it down, we would have to do an entire podcast just on Joss Whedon, because I love Joss Whedon, but He has some big old blind spots, and he has some things that he just doesn't do well, and people kind of overlook it because it's Joss Whedon. But we would have to unpack that. He has a lot of, and not just like filmmaking things, but he has a lot of things he does in plotting and stuff that just doesn't work. It's not good. It's borderline problematic. And I don't know. The first Avengers is very good.
Right. So
you have to give him that one.
Moving on from Marvel and DC, because Tyler has a good point there. We could go on for forever, which we will have some more DC talk here later, just on the comic side. A big thing that happened last year, it happened over a period of a few years, but Paramount agreed to move forward with the movie The Irishman with Martin Scorsese. Once Scorsese's budget came into picture, all these things like that, Paramount was like, we love you. We love Martin Scorsese films, but we're not carrying $300 million budget on a film like this. Especially as we kind of mentioned earlier, in this world where the $300 million is typically the box office numbers these big franchise movies pull in. So they completely gave it up, not even staying attached to it to Netflix. And we all saw the success there, how many Oscar nominations it got, how the success it was for Netflix and everything like that. So bringing it back again around full circle, Paramount is now sitting with Scorsese's Killer of the Flower Moon, the rights to that one. And how much money does Scorsese want again? $250 to $300 million as well to make a movie in Oklahoma about a murdering of Native Americans, like based on a book. So this time they were a little smarter about it. They decided, hey, let's find a partner to do this with us instead of completely letting it go. So turns out Apple and Paramount will be sharing the risk of this film, Apple footing the whole bill. So Apple is willing to cough up $300 million to make this movie. However, it will be then released theatrically first, with Paramount having the worldwide rights, and then it will land on Apple Plus exclusively after that. So very interesting take on where it seems like every Scorsese movie now is starting to go down this. And by the way, De Niro and DiCaprio are both set attached to this film.
I mean, I love Martin Scorsese. $300 million is a lot of money for a dialogue-driven think piece. That's what he makes. And he does great at them, right? Like, his movies are fantastic. I really, really, really like a lot of Martin Scorsese movies. That's a lot of money to sit people in front of a camera for 2.5 hours and have them talk at each other.
Yeah. Well, and you said, Paramount didn't want in on that risk, so like it paid off for Netflix, but did it? Like, if you don't know, like Netflix didn't necessarily make that money back. Like, it's impossible to tell. They got a lot of buzz for it. They got a lot of awards. They got a lot of prestige from it, but I doubt they made.
Well,
there's no way of measuring it. Like, there's no way of measuring it.
Let's put it this way too. Success for Netflix is, so Paramount, we're at a point to where, yeah, it's financial success he's looking at. Netflix is still chasing awards. So I think part of their success is those nominees and wins, because that's part of what they're after, not just the money. So I think until they are a studio that's won as many awards as a Paramount or Warner, you're right. There's no way to fiscally see the success, but I still think it was talked about quite a bit.
It's not that Netflix isn't trying to make money, but like, I think the risk reward, the math, the return on investment math that a Netflix does, or especially like an Apple does, is not the same that a studio does. Like, a studio needs to make so many dollars back on the dollar. Netflix is literally just throwing billions of dollars at the wall, just hoping things stick so that they can grow their market share. And Apple's still just trying to land. And Apple also is backed by a company that is sitting on enough cash to buy every other movie studio on the planet twice over. Like, at this point, it's almost surprising that Apple, when they started Apple TV Plus, didn't just buy a Paramount as opposed to start their own, you know, to start their own streaming service, because like, they can do that.
Don't if they any want ideas, Tyler.
Well, I mean, don't you remember there for
Amazon's going to buy AMC, Apple's going to buy Paramount? All these.
Well, didn't you hear all those rumors for a while where people were like, "Well, Apple should just buy Disney and just be done with it and just turn into the megacorp"? And they'll never do that, but I could definitely see Apple pulling a Google / Alphabet and spinning off Apple, like the hardware business, into one thing, and then an umbrella company, and then spinning off their production company and the Apple Music and throwing that all our services into another thing in production. But yeah, I mean, Apple's doing this every time you turn around. Apple's become the new Netflix in this space, or the new HBO Max and Apple or the new Netflix, where every time you turn around, someone signed a deal with them, a first look deal for millions of dollars. And they're just, they're doing what Netflix was doing a couple of years ago, where it's like,
right,
we got billions to blow and we're going to throw shit at the wall until we see what sticks. And then hopefully it'll drive people to our platform.
So my question, I'm going to ask you guys a question that kind of puts it back at Scorsese. 300 million, again, a lot of money for The Irishman, but there was so much technology used, right, to de-age, to set the, to set such a time span across decades there of those characters. What are for Killers of the Flower Moon takes place in one time period. It's an old, like, you don't have technology in the set. There's not anything like that. As you said, this isn't going to be a big explosion action Western. It's going to be a murder investigation thriller, which is going to be dialogue driven. What do you need $300 million for? Especially because when we talked about before the money was even rewarded, DiCaprio and De Niro are already in. I feel like when Scorsese calls up his favorites, right, they're like, we don't need a bunch of money. We're just going to make the movie with you.
Right. They're not making their standard $10 million for this film, I don't think. Like, you wouldn't think that. It's crazy to me. I don't know.
On top of that, they already said that Oklahoma, the reason they're filming in Oklahoma is because they got it with tax breaks down to $250 to $300 million because he needed more than that to film in other locations. I don't understand how he's doing that. But anyways, it's Imperative was obviously it was a very bold move on them. Imperative bought the rights to the book, a couple guys for a little studio that really wasn't anywhere to be found, got Scorsese to get in on this deal with them, which then has launched them up to it. So their production company is also still involved and is on the ride for this, which is going to be huge for them. But again, it's based on the 2015 is when they bought it. Excuse me. It's based on the book. I guess I don't know the year. Killers of the Flower Moon, The Osage Murders, and The Birth of the FBI. Interesting enough, it does take place in Oklahoma. So I think that was a big reason Scorsese wanted to be there.
It came out three years ago because it was on a bunch of lists. 2017. It came out in 2017 because it was on a bunch of award lists because David Gran wrote it, the guy who wrote Lost City of Z. Remember the one that got adapted into a... Right. That's the author who wrote the book, The Last City of Z. Lost City of Z is the same author who wrote Killers of the Flower Moon, which is David Gran, is his name? Amazon, I haven't read it. I've heard Amazon, it's really good. I read Lost City of Z. It's really good. So
yeah. So this, and I apologize. I say Western like it's Western. It actually takes place in the 1920s, but it does have to do with still Native Americans reservation and everything like that. So I'm really interested to see what the sets look like, what everything else is going on in order for a budget that big. I don't know. Maybe Scorsese just has gotten used to living the high life now. So he wants that kind of money for everything. But, let's real quick going through some of these things as we have a few other big things to talk about. One other one I wanted to talk about was Paramount confirms Sonic the Hedgehog 2. So apparently Sonic actually did really well considering how quickly it got cut out of the box office. $146 million domestically here. And apparently they haven't shared numbers, Paramount, but it did really well with video on demand because it very quickly went to VOD. And we know that Trolls 2 was very successful with that. So
did you guys see it?
I've had access to it since it went on video on demand and I have not seen it. I have not watched. Bob bought the digital copy and I still haven't watched it yet.
I should 100%. I want to watch it. I just never got around to it. But like, I don't know anyone who saw it that said it was bad. Like, no one's saying, like, this is a great movie, but I know a lot of people who watched it and said, yeah, it's perfectly fine. Jim Carrey's really funny in it.
Well, I'm curious, so, like, how that got greenlit, and we haven't had a sequel in the Detective Pikachu world. Like, I feel like that movie, like,
I feel like we got confirmation for more for that, though. We just don't have it yet, but I feel like they did give it a go.
Did we? Yeah, I don't remember hearing
about it. I would
have
to look.
They did, yeah.
I'd have to look, but what kind of numbers did Detective Pikachu do? Like, did it do very well? I really don't remember.
I thought it did. I haven't looked at the numbers. I mean, just colloquially, you know, I couldn't have told you that Sonic only made $136 million.
There's zero notes after the initial note, but on Wikipedia it says, months ahead of the release of Detective Pikachu, Legendary already announced they were making a sequel.
Right, I think because the buzz that was ahead of it.
But that's the last.
You got a box office total on that there, Tyler?
The box office total for that was $433 million on a $150 million budget. That I don't know. Was that domestic or?
I mean, that either way, even $300 million in the positive. I mean, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's $433 million worldwide.
That's still a good, that's still like you would think, especially for a family type franchise, enough to warrant another one to go on that much.
I mean, they keep making those video games. You'd think they'd keep making those movies.
Right. All right. So we'll have some things to say in closing about current events and everything like that. But there was, we did want to put a little bit of time into this big topic. And I'm going to take a second to explain it because it's very, very crazy. So obviously we covered it over on projectnerd.com initially. And I believe we talked about it briefly on the podcast with some of the other things of the coronavirus pandemic. Diamond Comic Distributors obviously closed the doors at some point of when it was when all this kind of started. But as it evolved, they even said, we're not paying you for the stuff or all that. They really kind of didn't stay friendly with the with their comic publishers. Because of this, DC, well, I get it. They never have really been friendly. And in my news post over at Project Nerd, you'll see that they kind of became a they've really been a bully in distribution because they've had complete control of the market. They've had a monopoly. It's screwed over people like us who were small independent publishers at times or creating comics. But during this time, it gave DC an excuse to look at other options. And the options they've gone with, in first glance, it seems really good. It seems like, okay, we're going to put some competition in distribution, but they're going to use Lunar Distribution and UCS Comic Distributors, which are very online focused. So the retail stores now are kind of pissed at DC for doing this because the companies that they're using are companies that are already against the retail mark, the retail model. They want it to go online. So we've kind of created a whole big mess. So as it seemed like a good announcement at first that DC was going to cut with Diamond, this may make Diamond rethink things. Marvel may be next. All of a sudden, places like Mile High Comics are offering 50% off DC Comics, called the DC Comics Sucks Sale, like things like that. There's a lot of that's going to kind of build out of this announcement, probably a lot more than DC probably initially thought. Now, I know, Tyler, you made some expressions at me. I know you're very familiar with how Diamond has been in the market, so I think you had some things to say on that. But overall, this picture kind of looks crazy, and I want to know what your guys' thoughts are on it.
I mean, Diamond's never been, I mean, we've spent a lot of time in the comic world. We know a lot of publishers. We know a lot of creators. We were publishers and creators for a while. Like, no, you're rarely going to be in a conversation with anyone, especially at our level, and hear super positive things about Diamond. But it was one of those evils that you just had to contend. Evil's a strong word, but it's just one of those things you had to deal with. Like, if you wanted to sell comics, you had to deal with Diamond. Like, that's just that was a truth of the world. Like, it was just how things worked.
Right. And can I jump? I want to jump in there for 1 second and say one thing. Part of that is not just because of Bully. There was a very legitimate reason, is that even as smaller independent publishers, they would pressure you to do numbers as larger publishers. That would meant you had to pay to print so many comics and ship them. And if they didn't sell, it wasn't on them, and they would cut ties with you quickly. So it was a very difficult thing. Yeah.
And there's also, and then on the retailer side, you would always hear negative things. Like, for instance, like you said, with certain, they would pressure smaller things to make so many to get listed, and then those would move, and then they would cut ties, and then you would call like, hey, people want this comic. How do I get it? Oh, we're out of stock of it. Like, you couldn't just go straight to the thing. It's like, hey, we're out of your comic. At the same time, they offered a service that was important, because when you talk about the sheer number of volume of retail locations where you can buy comics, like the distribution, the printing, the public, like all those things are huge, weird logistical nightmares. So like they provided a service that was necessary. I think it's unfortunate there wasn't another company willing or able to get into that same space and compete with them. Like, they were a de facto monopoly for so long. I don't know. I don't know that there's a good answer to this. Like, for the longest time, everyone has always said, like, well, the answer is you just have to do on-demand publishing for comics, but that's just not feasible with the sheer volume of the quality of a good comic, the sheer volume of comics are out there. Digital comics still haven't taken off for a lot of people. Like, people want physical comics. Diamond obviously isn't the best answer, but then, yeah, you're right. DC, like, I think everyone was excited that DC was finally going to break the Diamond monopoly, but then went with these other publishers who, you know, aren't super retail friendly either. I don't know. I think it's too soon to say what the fallout for this will be. I'm curious to see what else comes of this. But because when it's all said and done, Diamond has always had kind of a vice grip on comic publishing. But at the same time, like, if you weren't DC or Marvel or Image or one of those things, like, you could get by without dealing with Diamond to a point. You just had to self-publish. You had to Kickstarter it. You had to send it. You had to do all the logistics distribution yourself. But after a certain point, if you want to be in a store, that's the only way to get in a store. And I don't know. I guess I don't know the answer to it. It's a complicated issue, but I'm excited. And I think it's a good thing that a major publisher has cut ties with Diamond, because it opens the door to other companies to fill that niche. But the fact that the direction that DC went immediately after that doesn't fill me with a ton of hope for it. So, but DC's also been one of the ones who's really pushed the digital thing between DC Unlimited and some of their other things. They've definitely been of the two big ones. They've been the one who's, I think, pushed harder in the digital space than necessarily Marvel has. So I don't know.
I get smaller publishers needing the help dealing with all of the shops where people can buy comics, and, you know, the bookstores and the local comic shops and the national chains and all those kinds of things. It seems to me like Marvel and DC could do this on their own, right? They could hire people to deal with distribution. I mean, I figure they do it already, right? That's essentially what Diamond was doing, is they hired Diamond. Diamond comes in and takes care of all the distribution. But DC, I mean, they can figure it out. Marvel could figure it out. Marvel's got Disney with them now.
Right.
We can do this. This is a problem that money can solve 100%.
I think one of the problems with it is the numbers of scale when it comes to end of the numbers on it don't work out like you think they should for comic books, because comic books are smaller, lighter, cheaper than a book. You can't follow the same model for selling a hardback or even a paperback book. You'll even notice almost all comic book publishers, you don't buy a hardback collected edition of a trade through Diamond. Those get sold through actual book publishers. The logistics of actually just a loose leaf weekly comic are different when you're working in numbers that are because you're going to sell conceivably more of them than a book, but you have to sell more of them more often. You have to print them. You can't just do one giant printing and then hope for this to work out and the numbers of it. I think the numbers of scale of it are so much different than people try to compare it to book publishers just do this and do that. And I was like, yeah, but that doesn't work for when you're charging 10, 15, 20 bucks a book and you're going to sell X number of them, when you're charging a couple bucks a comic and you have to make, I don't know. I think there's a lot.
Well, to build
the logistics of it are weird.
To build on what you were kind of saying with DC really pushing for the digital online, I think that's probably a reason they've stayed away from this, because a lot of the conversation has been that Marvel has also been interested in breaking from Diamond and bringing it in-house, as you kind of brought up, Adam. But I think that kind of mixed with what that's known with what Tyler is saying too, is DC's probably not bringing it in-house is because they want it to go digital. They want to remove the printing costs. They want to get like that. Marvel, ever since it became a Disney thing, has been completely fine with the idea of that. We're going to continue to create comics to keep people interested in our characters and understanding that it's probably going to be at a loss. And we're going to turn around and make it on this end with the movies and the series and the everything like that. So I think that's a big difference. And I agree. I think one is that we might see a lot of players pop up here that can help the smaller publishers, but it's really going to be interesting to see what Marvel decides to do. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see them pull that fully in-house and start hiring the people to handle these things. The problem is if Diamond loses both Marvel and DC, this is not all of a sudden Diamond has competition and has to find new things to do. This is a will Diamond survive type conversation.
Yeah, what's the market share for Marvel and DC in terms of comic
DC
sales?
Is it half? DC is 30%, Marvel is 41%. So a total of 71% of the market share between them.
Yeah, so if they just walked away from Diamond, that puts Diamond out of business.
Pretty much.
I mean, there's no way they survive that. You can't lose 70% of your business and expect to stay in business.
Especially with how Tyler just broke it down. It's not, I just can downscale and ship off the 30% of my business. No, there is so much logistics and so many steps involved that you need it to be large scale. And that's probably also another reason why it's been so hard for anybody to show up and compete with Diamond over the years.
Yeah, and that's also, but Diamond's also the one thing that kept the comic book business from being, like, there was a lot of people, like, there was a period of time where I got my comic books, because I didn't live anywhere where I had a comic book shop, where I got all my comic books for mail, but that was not the norm. Like, you had to go to a shop, and that shop had to order your comic book, and then you had to buy the pre-order and do the thing, and, like, the comic books ran into that same problem that video games then for a while, where they subsisted entirely off of, like, pre-orders. If people didn't pre-order your book, then you didn't make enough for Diamond, and then Diamond didn't ship enough, and then if they wanted them, they couldn't get them because they didn't get the pre-orders for it. It was a whole thing. I think Diamond's the one thing that's always kept comic books from going the Amazon model, where everyone just goes and orders their comic books online and just has them shipped to them. Like, various industries have tried to pop up, and companies have tried to pop up and do that, but it's never really worked. That's a very possibility that's where it's going to go, but then you still run the same, like, do you print them on demand? Do you make huge warehouses full of them? And then the comics crash, like, you know, when they were making so many different, printing a million different copies of each one and then not having anything to do with them. I don't know. There's a lot to go. I mean, there's a lot to unpack here, but I don't know. I could conceivably see the big companies even going the route of, like, we're just going to release all comics digitally, and then every 6 months to a year, we'll release, like, a hardback or a paperback collected edition that actually gets printed and print it through a normal publisher, and you'll buy it in bookstores, and that's the end of it.
What do you think about, so the comic shop will have to evolve as well, right? Like, I mean, as it is, it's already pretty well moved to almost like a pop culture shop as opposed to just a comic shop, right? There's places right. that sell comics, but they're going to have four shelving units of pop vinyls and other statues, and the, you know, Aunt Lucia's DC Bombshells is going to have all that kind of stuff in there as well.
A lot of them have added, you know, the tabletop gaming, magic,
right.
things
memorabilia
like that.
Shops, right. essentially. So, I mean, what if they went to, you know, I mean, what if you were a comic shop and it's going to go to full ordering online? I mean, what if you set up a place for people to do their ordering and ship to you to save on shipping costs or whatever?
So
I mean, like, essentially a service in themselves, because I know they've done that for years with, you know, when you had to pre-order them and stuff like that anyway.
Right. The ones that DC are using are ones that DC has toyed with already, and we already saw some of that over the, what we'll call the pandemic shutdown of all this. So there were a number of times to where there were a couple ways to where there were a few distributors that kind of small time stood up, said, we'll get in the game right now. We're going to help out. You tell us what your local comic book store is, order it directly from us. Your comic book store still gets their cut to try to help those stores that were closed. So it's a so that system could be very easily set up, I guess is what I'm trying to say, because it was there for a thing like that. But I agree with you. It's the gaming part of it is more people just showing up and playing games. People don't spend tons of money for half your store to have tables for Magic the Gathering, right? So you've got, I think there's going to have to be new ways for some of these to find to evolve. We've seen a lot of them play with a lot of those ideas though, over this, again, this pandemic time to where they were closed. I know for me, for one, I spent a lot of money online for Facebook auction sales and stuff like that from different comic book stores to where they got creative and they shipped out stuff and like that too. So Tyler brings a good point. This is just announced, so we may have to watch to see where some of this goes. So I'm sure we'll have a lot to say over it over the next few months and beyond. We are getting close to end of time, so I do want to spend some time, as I know last week our podcast feed was very quiet. We did put out a Diving Deep podcast, and I think because it was relevant to everything going on, talking about epistemic bubbles and echo chambers. Obviously, if you disagree with it, feel free to go check it out and leave us feedback and things like that. You can check out all of our podcasts everywhere. But Monday, we dropped a couple podcasts, and then after Blackout Tuesday, you kind of saw us go quiet. We weren't around this week. I think a lot of us were taking in what was going on in this world, and there was a lot happening. And I mean, for lack of a better way to put it, revolution is happening right now. There is a lot of change coming, and we're seeing it in everybody stand up and for the things that are happening. I'm going to read our statement that we put on the website, as we understand a lot of you podcast listeners don't visit projectnerd.com, but we do encourage you to head on over to project-nerd.com for more geek news, to visit all of our other podcasts, learn what else you can get from us. But we do have a lot more information on there, including resources and lists right now for charities. We're looking at spotlighting, minority businesses, creators, things like that too. So see that coming up on the site over the next month. but our statement clearly stated this to our readers or to our listeners now. Project Nerd as a whole stands firm in believing that all of us are nerds. We believe that no matter someone's skin color, sexual orientation, place of birth, or other unique characteristic, that those make them beautiful. During this difficult time and at all times, we stand with the Black community in condemning institutional racism and unjust brutality. As we tried to figure out the best ways to say this as a brand, as a whole, we realized that we just had to say it. Project Nerd won't sit here and pretend there isn't a problem in this country. We won't pretend racism doesn't exist, and we're not going to be silent about it. George Floyd was murdered. No excuses. It wasn't the first time a person in power targeted a minority and went too far, and we very much hate to say it won't be the last. It's heartbreaking. It's a feeling of fear many of us will never have to endure personally, and the three of us have never had to endure personally, and it's a feeling of fear that we know many of you do have to feel. All of this is happening, and we're in June, and it's Pride Month, a month that Project Nerd typically celebrates and does a great job fundraising for each year. We want to continue to support the LGBTQT community during this time as well. So because of this, we are going to step up efforts, but we're not going to limit them to one single race or community. We want to include all communities that have had and still have their voices silenced. Because of this, we'll be expanding our fundraising efforts for the coronavirus relief fund. We'll be expanding to just our relief fund, and we'll be continuing to collect donations and raise money for individuals and communities impacted by social injustice. We also understand that at this time, your priority may not be geek and pop culture entertainment. So we have, obviously, as we've taken this in, slowed down some of our content a little bit, but we'll continue to put it out, and we'll continue to put positive content out there and try to give you all a place to escape if you need to, give you resources that will be available for things like this, and again, spotlight those who need to be spotlighted right now. We'd like to say thank you to all of you that are using whatever platform you have and can to make your voice heard right now. It will take all of us to impact change, and every single voice and vote is important and will be important. And with all those, we can change the world. As the doctor says, 900 years of time and space, and I've never met someone who wasn't important. We wholeheartedly agree, and we hope you continue to join us in making your voice heard. I wanted to read that statement, and I wanted to give us all a platform of a couple minutes. We discussed this thoroughly this week before we started recording and got to this episode, and we felt that as Project Nerd, our goal is to continue to entertain and to give you a safe spot to get away and check out on pop culture news and entertainment. And we also felt that three white men are yelling the same note because we're all on the same page for an hour may not be the best platform. So we hope that you did get a good 50 minutes of this and enjoy it. And we hope that statement is powerful. But I also feel it's important that each of us have a moment to speak. So Adam, Tyler, if you gentlemen have a few words to say, feel free to go into them now. Well, I guess take turns, but one of you can go. Who's going to go first?
All right. I'll go. I think we were both trying to figure out. We definitely talked about it this week, and I've been thinking about it and trying to figure it out. And so I needed to write it down. So I'm going to read what I wrote as well, because it was the only way I could get all of my thoughts down and have them make sense. So, okay, I need to write this down so I can get all of my thoughts out and in a way that makes sense. See, there you go. It'll also keep me from being angry the whole time I try to talk about it. I know people don't respond well to anger, or quote, I just can't listen to someone who is angry. You hear that all the time. So let me start off by saying, I'm not angry, I'm disappointed. That's right, you're about to get a dad lecture. I'm disappointed that it's 2020 and it's still considered a radical idea that everyone deserves to be treated equally. I'm disappointed that it's 2020 and that racial equality is somehow a political topic. I'm disappointed that people gaslight anyone who says Black Lives Matter with All Lives Matter, like trying to protect minorities or drawing attention to the problems of minorities means you don't care about everyone else. I'm disappointed that people think racial issues in the United States like they are things from our past. I'm disappointed that some white people are willfully ignorant of their privilege their skin color affords them. This doesn't mean your life isn't hard. It just means that your skin color doesn't make it any harder. I'm disappointed that there are people still alive who couldn't use a public drinking fountain because of the color of their skin. And painfully disappointed that those same people have to watch all of this still going on. I'm disappointed that people will use riots and looting as a way to discredit all the protesters in one breath and scream at the top of their lungs with the next breath that a few bad cops don't ruin the whole bunch. I'm disappointed that people are quoting Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as a way to discredit the protesters without even a hint of irony, using the words of a famous protester, maybe the most famous protester, to discredit protesting as an idea that makes my mind and my heart hurt. But Adam, you say, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was only in favor of peaceful protests, not riots and looting. And you're correct. Way back in the 1960s, you know, before he was assassinated for thinking that black people and all people of color should be treated equally to white people, he said just those things. But imagine how he would feel knowing that if he had stayed alive, he would have to spend the next 52 years of his life protesting the idea that cops shouldn't kill people of color without repercussions. His would be a righteous anger and fury if that were the case. But mostly I'm disappointed in myself. I'm disappointed that I don't have the energy to be angry about all of these things all of the time. I'm disappointed that I use my privilege to be able to escape these issues when I should use it to protest and to help explain them. I'm disappointed that I can ignore these issues and my life is easier, that I can simply not read a comment section because I know it's going to be full of hatred and awfulness. I'm disappointed that I don't have the courage to spend every hour of every day calling you out on your bullshit. I want to be better, and I'm disappointed that I allow you to be the reason that I'm not.
Good luck, Tyler, following up that. There
you... Yeah, that was well done. I probably should have written my things down. The problem was is I started writing and realized I was going to go on for way too long because there's so many things that I'd like to talk about. But at the same time, like, it's not – this is not the time for me, you know, the white guy from the Midwest who has never really had to deal with all these things to talk. It's our time to listen. It's our time to sit down and shut up and just listen about the experiences of people who don't have the same experiences as us, and to stop trying to pretend as if because we haven't witnessed or experienced a thing, it doesn't exist. That's a thing that children say. Like, that's, you're playing peekaboo with a blanket there. Like, I get that you don't, the whole out of sight, out of mind thing makes me angry. Like Adam said, he's just disappointed. He's not angry. He's just, I'm actually angry. I've been angry all week. Like, I just have constantly had to like stop talking to people because of how angry I've gotten. And at the same time, I can't even begin to try and understand being on the side of this, but being someone who's black, being someone who's marginalized, being someone who's had to experience this in their day-to-day life every single day. And there's a lot of subjects on which I want to talk about, like anyone who employs bad faith arguments or whataboutism, like, well, you should do it peacefully. They've been doing it peacefully for a really long time, and you move the goalpost. Like, they knelt during anthems, and now all of a sudden it's not about police brutality. It's about disrespecting the flag, and it's about this. Like, it makes me so frustrated. So I'm going to limit my complaints and my anger and my thing to just one specific topic. We're going to talk about that thing and then we're going to be done with it. And that is, do not, under any circumstances, counter anyone who says Black Lives Matter with All Lives Matter. At worst, you're ill-informed and being dismissive. At worst, you're being actively racist and arguing in bad faith. No one who says Black Lives Matter is saying only Black Lives Matter. They're saying Black Lives Matter too. And when you turn around and say that All Lives Matter in response, you're dismissing them, you're pretending like their pain doesn't matter, and you're arguing in bad faith in a way that is just damaging. I can't even express how bad it is. If we all sit down to have a meal and everyone at the table gets an equal portion except for you, and you say, I should get an equal share, and my response is everyone should get an equal share, I'm just I definitely should have written it down. It's really bad, but don't say it. If your response to Black Lives Matter is All Lives Matter, you're either willfully missing the point or you're part of the problem, and I don't have time for you. I need you to take some time and just think about it from a place that comes from somewhere that's not privileged, because white privilege is a thing. All privilege is a thing. Economic privilege is a thing. Regional privilege is a thing. these are all things that you may not know, you may not understand, you may not experience because you've never seen them, depending based on your lifestyle, based on where you live, on how you grew up and things like that. But you can't, I know that there are people who say all lives matter because they feel attacked, or they feel that Black Lives Matter is something that's like attack. It's not attacking you. Like, you're not going to lose something. Like, the ultimate goal of Black Lives Matter is to not, like, let's start killing the white people. It's let's maybe get everyone on the same level playing field. We're not taking anything from you. We're trying to give something that someone else has never had, that you've always taken for granted. And I need you to get to a place where you can understand that. And if you're unwilling to understand that, or you do understand it and still feel the same way you do, I don't have time for you. And you should probably stop listening to this podcast forever, because we would rather you not be around. So if you have taken the time to involve yourself and to read about it and listen, that's all I can say, is just to listen to the people to whom this is their life experience. Then your answer to Black Lives Matter is still all lives matter. Here's the part where I get mad. You can get fucked and go away. We're done with you. So that's my, if your answer is all lives matter, get fucked.
Well, gentlemen, I am damn proud to call you my friends long before Project Nerd. You both brought tears to my eyes. Not damn proud of our Project Nerd team for all, not a single one on that team has sat there and been quiet or retorted with what we're talking about or done anything like that. Every single one wanted us to come together as a company and speak up and be a brand that was pushing for change. So damn proud of it all. Really excited about that. And I hope that, as hard as this is right now, especially for those that are really being impacted by it, that it does bring the change we need to see. And there's definitely a lot happening different. So many times people have been quiet because of the bottom line, and it's beautiful to see all, I don't know how many businesses and companies speak up and unite and get behind this time, finally. With that, obviously, like we said, if you want more information, we're putting together a resources list. You can already go to projectnerd.com, go under the more section in the menu, click on life, or even just search it. And we have, and we're actually, you could even just go to the resources button on the top where this COVID resources, we're expanding that obviously to include resources here. We already have a nationwide list of charities for all, as Tyler said, marginalized groups, not just Black community, that can be donated to, supported, and not even just with money, but time and other resources. We're working on spotlighting creators and artists and all kinds of individuals in those communities as well. And we do have 2 to 3 team members that are doing a fantastic job behind the scenes right now, putting together lists of resources in our home markets for Project Nerd, as we have many of them across the country. We want to continue to be loud and supportive on this, but at the same time, you're going to see a lot of other pop culture information, some positive news come out of the site, because again, we are promising you a space to where if you need a minute to breathe, and yeah, it is privileged, but if you need that privileged minute to breathe to get away from it, no matter your, as we said, skin color, sexual orientation, or anything else, that you can head on over to Project Nerd and check it out. We stand in unison. This is brand wide. Not a single voice has spoke up against any of thing we've wanted to say on this, and we are proud of it. So gentlemen, thank you again. And I do want to add, I know Bob would be standing and saying the same things with us right now. And unfortunately, this is all at a time where his stuff is all packed up and he can't be here to lend his voice to, but definitely don't want to make it feel like Bob wouldn't be, because Bob would be right here with us as well, joining in on what we had to say. So thank you guys. Thank you everybody else for listening. Again, this is the Nerdcast by Project Nerd, brought to you by Geek Garage. Head on over to projectnerd.com, project-nerd.com for all the other content we talked about. Head on over to Geek Garage to show them their support and give them a thanks for allowing us to be able to continue to record this content and get it out to you. Until episode 231, this is Iggy signing off for the Nerdcast.
Hey, Pro Nerds, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like the Nerdcast and other amazing Project Nerd podcasts, please go give us a subscription, a like, a review, wherever you find us, as we need your love and support to continue making awesome content. Next week, we'll be back with another great episode of Nerdcast, as well as other original Project Nerd podcasts.